Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who has lost 3 times on Pointless Celebrities. And if he goes on again and loses again, that is beating the law of average. Just 1 time out of 4, he should just win just by chance. It's Richard Herring! Thank you very much. Welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I came up with a great one. Oh yeah, I was flying drones down by Heathrow Airport with a load of middle-aged guys get together on a Sunday just so you can fly a drone near to an aeroplane. He called it Rahelis for those guys there. I don't know if that's going to catch on. It's kind of weird living out in the country, and my life has changed a lot. It's kind of horrible coming back into London. It's disgusting here, and you're all idiots for living here. So go and live in the country. It's much better. I heard an owl the other day, and I was scared by a horse. There's animals out there. It's terrifying. I saw a horse. Someone told me this would happen. I thought they were joking. I saw a horse scratching its ear with its back hoof. That's what happens when you're in the country. You don't get that in London. You're like, literally, they somehow lifted that leg up and were doing that like a dog. I've got a theory that horses are just big dogs. Could be. I've also got a theory that horses are just men who've been fallen victim to some kind of curse and just had their faces elongated because they have hairstyles. It's weird. When you look at them up close, they've just got hairstyles. I've been obsessing about the latest Stereophonics song. I don't know if you like the Stereophonics. Ian Stereophonic is the main one, isn't he? He's Ian, the Welsh guy. There's this song called All In One Night. Have you heard that song? You kids should get out and listen to Radio 2 more. It's on there all the time. It's about a guy going to a club, deciding he was going to go home, but his friends want to go to a party, and he goes to a party, and there's a pregnant woman who lives in the house, and then she has a baby, and he drives to the hospital and crashes his car on the way to the hospital, and then they get married. Not heard it? I'm not going to do my stuff about it. It's weird because there are a few songs you listen to where you're not sure whether the protagonist in the song is meant to be a likable figure or not. The minute you've gone to a party and it's 2 o'clock in the morning, he goes to a party and there's a pregnant woman coming getting a glass of water who lives in the house, you kind of think, fuck, why are we having a house party in a house with a flatmate is a heavily pregnant woman? Well, a woman so pregnant she's about to go into labour. And he doesn't go, oh shit, we should stop. He carries it until 3 o'clock in the morning. She goes, then he waits an hour to drive her into hospital. All right, don't worry about it. Don't matter. I'll just read the blog. It's funny on a blog. So, we're going to crack on. My guest tonight, can't believe you don't like the Stereophonics. You're so uncool. My guest tonight is probably best known as Chrissy the Unemployed Bee in Revolting. And the woman in Cafe in Count Arthur Strong. That is two most famous roles. It's Rachel Paris, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. Hello, how are you doing? Are you all right?
Yes, thank you. Thank you for bringing up those accolades. Oh,
yes. What is Chrissy the Unemployed Bee? What was that?
That was in a show by those two clever young boys who do The Revolution Will Be Televised. Oh, yes. They did a new one, a new series this year called Revolting, that was a similar vibe, like satire and everything. And they had a sketch about homeless people working as bees picking up litter.
Okay.
I might have missed the really key satirical point
someone had a go at those fucking bees.
Yeah.
They're fuckers.
Exactly. That's what the vibe was.
Everyone loves them.
So I was dressed as a bee, which was great. I dressed as a bee for one of my first theatrical performances when I was 5, actually.
Oh, did you?
When I had ballet lessons for 4 months, and then they said I shouldn't carry on. and I dressed as a bee for a little performance. So
it's fun dressing up.
Full
my
circle.
Daughter dressed up as a bee as well in Edinburgh. It's nice.
Oh, my womb.
It's kind of nice when you're... So when you're cute. Little, you can just walk around wearing whatever you want.
Yeah, and everyone and goes, like, even if they're dressed as a turd or something, you're like, oh, you're so cute. So cute.
And what about what did the woman in the cafe in Count Arthur Strong do? I haven't watched Count Arthur Strong. I've heard very good things about
it. Really funny. Yeah. It's really funny. That was really nice. It was actually only like 3 lines, but it was a nice, funny line.
I got that from the fact she's called Woman in Cafe rather than Jennifer. Oh.
Exactly.
Yeah. Was it, can I have egg and chips? Thank you. This egg and chips is nice.
It was similar.
Yeah.
You should write it.
I should be that woman.
Yeah,
I go out for a lot of auditions for characters like that.
Well, nailing them.
I was meant to be, what was it, in Sherlock. I went for an audition for Sherlock.
I love Sherlock.
But I was literally, when I watched it, what was he called? It was like Confused Man or some angry. What was it? Irate Man. I can't remember what it was.
I can see you being Irate Man.
But then when I watched, I was irate by the time I got there because I went to Richmond to do it and I've got the train said it was going one way and it didn't go the way. And I was half an hour late and I was really angry.
I
still didn't get it. And then when I saw it, the guy doing it, literally, it was just like a camera technique, so you couldn't really see the person saying it, like it was all blurred, because Sherlock was blurred. And he went, and it was sort of, and his line was, so I went to fucking audition for that part.
Exactly. They say on the casting call for parts like that, where they don't even see above your neck, they say, excellent comic timing required. They say a very experienced comedian is required for this part. I went for an advert for Travel Lodge or the other one, and literally I got there and it said very experienced comic actresses required for this part, and I went for it, and in the audition they said, yeah, so what you've got to do is a teddy bear is going to come up to the counter and ask for a room for the night, and you've got to go like this. That was it. That was the entire audition. Yeah. I did that 4 times and I did not do it well enough.
You did it well then. It's a shame they didn't.
Thank you.
Send this.
Thank Thank you.
We can send this in and see if they'll let you have it retrospectively.
Yeah, although they might not like that. I'm calling them the other one.
That's the first rule of the advert. I think it's for Premier Inn.
Yeah.
I don't know, I'm not sure.
Yeah. Might have been Ibis, to
They're
be honest
all
with
the
you.
Same.
I can't remember.
Premier Inn are good, actually.
Yeah. Is that the one Lenny Henry
Lenny
says?
Henry does. Yeah, I mean, probably wasn't that because it was a teddy bear rather than Lenny Henry.
Yeah.
If it had been Lenny Henry coming in, then that would have been Premier Inn.
Yeah.
That was, I don't know, it's probably a...
I would have been less like... Hi!
And why are you staying at the Premier Inn, Lenny? Just the advert, the money you get from the adverts must
really
pay for...
Value is value, isn't it?
Malmaison. Do you think he really stays at the Premier Inn? Yeah. You have a lot of trust in Lenny Henry. I think he probably has to stay at the Premier Inn. I think he probably checks into the Premier Inn and then he has a little shoot there in his room that spirals around. He comes out. It's very good, the Premier Inn. I'm not knocking it. I have to stay at them due to budgetary circumstances. Hey, you've done loads of stuff. What is the best thing
Thank you...
What is the best... Apart from the things I've picked out, what...
I have done a lot of stuff. Thank you for noticing the number of things I've done.
And the problem with you is that you are multi-talented.
Thank you.
It is difficult. That is... You can act. You can do stand-up comedy. You can sing really well. You can improvise stuff.
Those ones, yes.
Yeah.
That's loads of stuff. That is... Yeah.
Too much stuff.
Do you know what my mum, actually, who... is not thrilled with my career, has said that. She said, you do too many... She said, I always did do too many things right from school. She was like, you do too many things. You need to choose and not try and do everything because then you'll never excel at one thing. And I think that's proven absolutely true.
I didn't say that. That was what your mum said. Your mum said the same thing. Yeah. I didn't say that. I think you're very good at all this.
No, I won't quote you on it, although the truth has fallen on me.
You've realised what's happened. Yeah. How did you... So you start out as a singer, really, before you got into comedy, is that right? Or were you always doing comedy?
No, I definitely wasn't always doing comedy. I don't know how I ended up in comedy. Evidently. So I started out in music. I did music at university. And
you were quite hard to find out information about your early life, I have to say. Almost like
Wikipedia,
it's a guarded... There's no Wikipedia page, but then there's no...
Well, you know what? It's because I don't talk, unlike you, about going to Oxford.
I won't shut up
about it. I don't want to go on about it. Look at us, the fucking Oxford elite, in our smug white sofas. So I did music at Oxford, and then I did drama and stuff like cabaret and drama and stuff all the way through that. And so I always did both, and a bit of like classical, jazz, piano, burlesque.
Really?
What a dry year for everyone. I did a show that received the following review in my first Edinburgh Fringe 2005, which said, the only thing that can be relied upon, this was the burlesque show, the only thing that can be relied upon in this painful hour is that not a single person on stage has ever experienced orgasm. And it was true.
It was a weird little period where burlesque was, and it was
trendy,
about that
it was trendy,
time.
Wasn't it
was very trendy, and I always found it quite confusing. Weird, when I first started doing stand-up, you would do stand-up gigs basically in strip joints.
Really?
Yeah, so like there's a lot of gigs in Soho, and you would be in the sharing a dressing room with the girls who were stripping, and you would go one way and they'd go the other way, and Madame Jojo's, which then became a burlesque place.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so then, 10 years, 15 years on, I was going, and then there was sort of people sort of doing stripping but not doing stripping.
I do still find burlesque sort of confusing ideologically, like... Where you stand on it, like as a feminist, not where you stand on it.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm not standing on it.
No, I feel like I have to stand on it, and I don't know where I do. I certainly know when I did burlesque, I was neither feminist enough or like I didn't do either. Like I didn't strip enough to do proper burlesque, but I didn't strip. Not enough to be a proper feminist. Kind of like stripped. The main thing was like, I'll sing. And I was like, I'm a singer, really. I just happened to be doing burlesque and taking my clothes off. But I didn't take enough clothes off to do it properly. So I don't know what I thought I was.
No. I find it just uncomfortable. And when you go sometimes, when we did the Adelaide Festival, again, all those gigs were in like the red light area of Adelaide. And like the comedians go, oh, do you want to come see a strip show afterwards? I go, no. I just feel awkward. It's just so embarrassing, I think.
But then I love watching like Dieter Von Teese, you know, like a stunning burlesque. And then I think to myself, I think I get the same thing out of watching people like Dieter Von Teese as I do out of watching Strictly Come Dancing, which is amazing outfits and glamour and glitz and sequins and very good makeup. So I don't, I don't know where the line is there.
There was a brilliant girl called Hula Girl. Did you ever see her? Who did a lot of those burlesque shows. So. But she did loads of things with hula hoops and stuff.
And then it's just circus, which I love.
That was good, yeah. She was the only good thing in it. No offence, I never saw you do it. I just was confused by it when I did that video of me being confronted by a heckler that was very big about that 2005.
Yeah, I remember,
That was part of a burlesque night, sketch and stand up night.
Wow! And people really like to mix things on a night, don't they?
And the reason that had ever seen this, there's a like 15-minute video of the heckler, very drunk man, just shouting at me and me getting increasingly angry with him. But I would the reason he got cross was because there was three very late middle-aged bald men sitting at the front of this, on the front table of this burlesque, and there were girls coming on doing burlesque and taking some of their clothes off, as you say. Just like the night was really a burlesque night, and these guys sitting in the front row, so where you are, had these cameras with massive lenses on, and they were taking pictures of this girl taking all her clothes off, and I didn't know whether they were officially cameramen.
Yeah.
But there was three of them, so it seemed like you didn't need that many.
Yeah.
And they were sitting at the front and they had these long lenses, and then when I came on they stopped taking photos, and I said, why are you not taking photos of me? what have I not done? And then Dan was going, do you need those lenses? When you're this close to the stage, do you need those lenses? Like, that can't you just take it? And so I was taking the piss out of me. I was just, it's weird, there's these three guys here. And then a guy behind them started saying, you can't say that to these guys. And that was that's where it began.
Wow.
But it was a bit like that. It was like
you didn't get that lead up in the video. That's interesting.
But it's that excuse of, you know, this we're in a classy place, but it's still horrible men leching.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, no matter how brilliant an act you're doing, sometimes there's still going to be creepy men leching at you. Yeah. But that's the world.
It is, as we're discovering. Yeah. Oh my God. Let's do that bit at the end, because we can get serious at the end. There's so much. I just so love Ostentatious, which we've had Carriard on before, who's also in it, but it's a revolving company, but it's six
slightly
or seven.
Only slightly revolving. So there were six of us originally. Now there's eight of us, four girls, four boys. Each show are six people. So yeah, it's slightly revolving. Yeah. You might miss one of your favourites if you're not careful, which is basically Andrew Hunter Murray these days.
But it's an awesome idea, and I think improv kind of. I think I had a very negative view of it. I think, again, from seeing lots of student stuff, I suppose.
Yes.
But it's so detailed. So basically you improvise, and I've seen it about five or six times, and I would love to understand how you do it, because most things with comedy, I'll go and see it, and certainly if I see it a couple of times, I'll go, okay, yeah, I know how this works. Yeah. I don't know how it works, and I don't know how you do it.
The main thing everyone wants to know about Ostentatious is how it works, and we haven't got a good answer for everyone, because the main thing everyone says is, yes, I understand that it's improvised, but I'm sure you have a very clear story that you stick to and you just hang the details on. And we don't. We really, really don't.
No.
If we did, the stories would be better. They make no sense. If you've ever seen it, like, if we had a really beautiful story structure that we hung details onto, then there would be like a peak, an arch, and a sort of like perfect, you know, story structure. There isn't, and that's why people come back again and again. It's really an arc. We know how to tell a story. And in rehearsals, we talk about like, oh, you know, halfway through, we aim to know who the main character is and what they want, and we know that. After 10 minutes, it's good to find out if there's a relationship that we need to develop that. So we've studied story, but it really is like there is no clear structure beyond basic good storytelling.
Yeah. It's so impressive. The thing I worry about is there's so many of you and you're touring it. How do you make any money?
Well, because it's quite theatrical.
Yeah.
We tour it not like, I think if we were slightly more, even though it is a comedy show, I think because it's got costumes and everything, we do it. We play to like sort of theatres like this and everything. Yeah. So we'd actually do make some money.
Okay, well that's good. But like this, you know, the mechanics of going, because you're going all around the country. I know you played Leicester Square Theatre a lot with it, don't you? And
we do. Yeah, yeah. I played Leicester Square Theatre for years. Yeah, yeah. Leicester Square Theatre has been a real home to us. And then we have we just came back from Salford. Yeah, last night. So we're on tour at the moment. It's our fourth tour. So, yeah, we get around.
Have you got a big bus, or is it a stagecoach? Or
no, we have actually, yeah. We've got a bus and a tour van and everything, and we've never felt more rock and roll.
Sitting there doing
code words in our scene, so rock and roll. It's amazing.
Can you sleep? Has it got beds in the bus that you can sleep in?
No, we don't. We stay in, like, travel lodges or the other one, so we don't need to.
Don't stay in travel lodges. They have bogies on the curtain, shower curtain.
Change your tune.
That's what I've discovered about that. It's well, if you do go and see it, if you get, it's very hard to actually describe in words, I think, how it works. But it's an improvised Jane Austen story. You don't need to know about Jane Austen.
No, not at all. No, it can be fun if you don't, actually. But also fun if you do.
And do you genuinely, I know you sort of pick out three at the beginning and then you say, we're going to do this one. Is it always the one you pick out?
Always the third. The only time we have never not done the third, even because it can be painful because the second one or the first one can be wonderful and you're like, oh, I'd love to do that one. But we always go for the third one. The only time we don't do the third one is if it's really egregiously racist or has like the word cunt in it or if we've had it before. Am I
cunt and cuntability. What is that? I can't imagine something going ostentatious.
And everyone is so funny, like
cunt, the motherfucking cunt making Jane Austen out of that, pricks. Being heckled in paper form.
You're joking, but they do. They do. We've pulled out of that. Think of the statistics. So we've done 600 shows, about 400 people per show for 600 shows, and we pull the third one out of a hat for every show. So we've had, of that statistics, we've had sex and sexability twice. We've had fuck and fuckability twice.
Yep.
And I think it was only cunt and cuntability that we put back in. And everyone's like, oh, this will fox them. This will be, no one else will think of this. And it's like, they really have thought of that. And we're like, oh, it's another show about sex, which is fine. Anyway.
I wish she'd written cunt and cuntability. That would be...
Don't we all? She died too soon.
Take it from us.
For other reasons as well. Sorry, I should say that.
So, all right, this is the only bit of autobiography I've managed to find out about you from your childhood.
I didn't know I was such a mystery.
You are a mystery. Is that you were in a Christian rock band and you were an organist in a church.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's true. So,
what did you play in the Christian rock band?
Keys. Keys and vocals.
Did you write your own songs about Jesus?
No, we didn't actually. Uh-huh. We did, you know, the sort of... Christian hymns that are more like pop songs.
Yes.
And we did them.
Oh, Jesus, I have promised
to serve you to the end. God, I lift your name on high. All of those. So there's some great ones. They're really good songs. I was sort of brought up in the Methodist church, and I was like organist for the church by the time I was like 12.
Wow, that's young.
Yeah.
It's a prodigy.
Partly through me being a sort of prodigy and partly through the lack of organists in Leicestershire.
I'm wondering if there was an older organist who you edged out, though. There must have been some guy who was going, sorry, Clive, you know, organing isn't quite good enough. We've got a 12-year-old coming in. That's how bad you are, mate. Sling your hook.
Oh, no.
Tried to put a booby trap in the organ. When you press, is there something in there? Is there a film where someone presses a certain key on the organ, it's going to explode or something?
Yeah.
You never press that. There's a lot of pedals on an organ.
There was an older man who sort of coached me through it. And he was so sweet and he gave me all. Anyway, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, yes. I did do that. And I was in, then when I was a teenager, when I was like 15, I was in a Christian rock rock band with an electric guitar.
Wow.
Yeah, I know, pretty cool. And drums and flute.
And do you think you converted many of the youth of Leicestershire to...
No, I think what I did was piss off a lot of the 75-year-olds of Leicester who hated the fact that there was this rock, but they wanted the organ and traditional church music, and there was like this noise in the church, and they didn't really enjoy it very much. But I just enjoyed it for... I think by the time I was like 15 or something, I think I'd sort of spoken to my mum about it. I was like, I don't really believe in that.
Yeah.
And she's been very cool about it always. But I really loved the music, so like I just really liked singing. I still do. I still work in a church school, and I still end up every Monday. I play for a church service. So I think. Yeah, I can't get away from it. I can't get away from Jesus Christ.
There are some good tunes. There are some good tunes.
There's some good tunes.
There are some good tunes.
There's some great tunes.
Yeah, and you know it's a good way to indoctrinate people into
believing
some rubbish.
I don't do it knowingly.
There was another Oh Jesus I Have Promised. There was an alternate Oh Jesus I Have Promised. I'm not doing very well. It had a different tune, but it wasn't as good
not
as Oh Jesus I Have Promised.
We just have to do the end.
They don't have this now. Kids don't have this. They don't have to sing. You're not allowed, are you? You're not allowed to sing hymns anymore.
Do they not?
I don't think so. There were some good ones. When I needed a neighbour,
really?
Were you there?
Oh,
were you there?
When I needed a neighbour, why you there? Why you there? It was so accusatory, wasn't it?
I was told
there?
I was naked.
Why you there?
Yeah, I was there.
Yeah, I was. Okay. I take it back. Yeah. I take it back.
I wasn't there because I'm 8 years old and I live in Somerset in 1976 and you were alive in naught BC, so I wasn't there, mate. No, go have a go at some of the have a go at Pontius Pilate. It's his fault. Don't come after me. There was another really catchy one that we like. It'll come back to me. I still like all those hymns.
Yeah.
I found myself singing really obscure jingles from very old adverts.
Oh yeah, like
that. The other day I found myself singing and knowing all the words to "Open Your Bank Account, Britain, with the National Gyro Bank. Get it in your post office, Britain. There's a checkbook waiting for you. There's a bank account that is really free." I don't know where that came from. There was another one as well. It's so obscure. And yet I know all the words. And it just came back to me. And then I think this is just getting old.
Amazing.
That your mind starts wandering. Yeah. It's Alzheimer's, isn't it? You start just... And why did I sing it? There isn't even a National Gyro Bank anymore, I don't think. It was the bank at the post office. I had an account. Had a little blue bank book and they stamped it and you put money in. It was good.
Do you remember? The one that gets in my head is "Double Mint refreshes your breath naturally." Do you remember that one?
No, I don't. Well, there's a lot.
Just really
but I do
gum.
Find myself saying quite a lot, "Your girlfriend's going to love your oniony breath," which was from my
line.
From
it was that very advert.
Yeah, was it that one?
I remember the music. You remember the script.
Yeah.
What does that say?
Because he would say it... he was glad that the bloke had oniony breath.
Yeah,
he was kind of, "I don't like you. I don't like the fact you've got a better girlfriend than you deserve."
He was a snide man.
Your girlfriend's going to love your oniony breath,
wasn't he?
Doesn't matter, mate. I've got these.
Yeah, I've got double men. Yeah. Now I'm going to snog my girlfriend.
Good, isn't it? I remember stuff. Do you remember things? Do you remember obscure things that nobody else remembers? That is what I'm good at. And that is, who remembers the National Gyro Bank advert? Cheer. Yeah. One bloke. That's it. That's me. That's what I'm Peter Kay for you, mate. That's it. It's you and me. We're going to go on a stadium tour. It'll be me singing an advert. There was another one. I'll try and remember what it was that
I've
came
got
back
a question.
To me.
It's not musical. Do you remember the advert for... I think it was just for milk. Was there an advert for milk?
Yeah.
Is that a thing? For Accrington Stanley?
Yeah.
Do you remember that one?
Yeah.
Who are you going to play for? Accrington Stanley. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But
that
you're
was offensive,
too,
wasn't it? I'm sorry.
You're
that was
too young, offensive. But there was... Watch out, there's a Humphrey about. That's one of the first adverts I remember. Oh. Do you remember that's a proper Peter Kay one. Come on! Where's my old people in the audience? There's a Humphrey about. It was a Humphrey was a straw. It's like a red and white straw.
It sounds terrifying and Wiccan.
I'm looking at this old geezer here, this old fella. Old Father Time in the second row there. He'll turn out to be 45 years old. Because I'm 50 now and I just think everyone's still much older than me. I look at someone and go, I met my accountant.
Old-timer.
I met an accountant today and he had grey hair. I went, oh, look at this old fella. He said, yeah. I said, oh, you know, I'm getting older. And he said, yeah, I know what you mean. I turned 40 this year. You're old, mate. How can I be 10 years? I'm young. Look at me. I'm a youngster, aren't I? I don't wear a suit, so how can I be 50?
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. I was wearing a jumper,
so
I am
smart.
Young.
You've got jeans on.
I've got some jeans on. These are clean on for you, these, Rachel. Because I looked at the jeans I've been wearing for the last 6 weeks, every single day, and walking the dog in, and thought, I probably can't wear those if I'm being filmed. They're covered in dirt from the country.
And you're right, I would have judged you.
You would have judged
me. I would have judged you.
These are clean on.
Very good.
Thank you. and I changed my shoes so they didn't have shit all over them. It's an amazing... Just getting older is just about... I'm just realizing, just basically, I'm a shit wrangler now. That's my just job. I go from picking up dog shit.
Yeah.
You think picking up warm...
And you've got child shit
I've got child shit. You've got to wipe that off their testicles, their feet, out of their vaginas.
I was going to say, one of each.
Yep.
Yeah. Sorry. Oh, no, one of them's got...
I thought it'd be, of having a dog and having kids, I thought the worst bit of it would be the shit. That was the thing that put me off all the time. I thought, I don't want to deal with someone else's shit. It's the best bit. It's the best bit of having... I love, like, especially if you let the dog out in the garden for a bit, and then you have to go and find where it's done a shit. When you that's really good fun. And then you pick it up. And cold dog shit is worse than warm dog shit.
This is why I don't want a dog.
And then like having to clean a child with shit all over them. It's like, but it is. It's like a sort of video game or something. You've got to get it. You've got to get it all.
You just did a gesture. Really, it's like you're just wiping it with a chamois.
You've got to get it all. You've got to get in there. And that's the boy thing. Yeah. You pick something up and go, oh, there's a load on here as well. Up their backs. He hasn't weed in my face yet. But that's something to look forward
to.
It's the best thing, dealing with other people. But then that's your job. The older you get, the more responsibility you get, the more it's just dealing with someone else's poo and getting less good at dealing with your own poo. I've kind of forgotten how to do my own poo. I've got worse at wiping my bum than I did.
You need a chamois, mate. Yeah, chamois up the back.
I would like someone to do it for me. I mean, I don't think that's too much. I'm doing it for two people and a dog. It would just be nice if someone came around.
You've got to delegate.
Let me have a little crack of that. Don't look at me like you don't poo, madam. You got poo all out your bum. You love it. You love it. Anyway, yeah. So I am young. And you're also in a band. My wife told me you were in a band. I didn't know about this. You were in a band with Danielle Ward and Helen Arney.
Oh yeah, briefly I was. Yeah, not long after I started, so I guess around 2011, me and Helen... Do we know Helen Arney? Yeah, amazing Helen Arney. And Danielle Ward, we were in a group called The Balconettes, and Danielle on drums and Helen on ukulele or guitar and me on piano, and we did just around a space for about a year, I think, doing little gigs around the place. Yeah, it was really fun.
Cool. What sort of stuff were you doing?
Well, we did stuff that eventually me and Helen were like, we're going to use this for our solo career. So we did quite a fun, slightly lascivious song called, like, it was kind of a piss take of the Spice Girls, If You Want to Be My Lover, You've Got to Get With My Friends, which always sounds a bit like you need to sleep with my friends.
Yeah.
So it was called We All Come Together.
Right.
We haven't done since The Balconettes. Maybe it's time for a reunion. And there was one that was by Helen, which I absolutely love, called I Prefer You in a Coma, which is brilliant. And I did one called Once You're 30, You're Basically Dead, which I still do.
Oh, yes, you still have seen. I've heard that one. That's a great. But there's a lot of them on. You've got a Bandcamp. Is that a channel?
I have, yes, yeah.
And there's lots of them on YouTube as well. And you've done like quite impressive videos for a lot of these songs as well.
For a few of my songs, yeah, I try and do videos because what I'm trying to do, Rich, is keep up with the digital age.
Yes, good idea.
And I find it very difficult. I don't know how people do it. You know, some people are just putting out videos like
Yes.
All the time, constantly.
Yeah, I mean, it is quite impressive.
I don't know how they do. I take a year to do a single music video. I find it really hard, but that's what the kids are doing, so that's what I'm trying to do.
Well, yours are quality. So there's a very fun one of I Dreamed a Dream.
Oh, yeah.
That's good. And that's in one, you do that in one take.
Yeah.
Which I like.
That's a parody of I Dreamed a Dream from Les Miserables, but with me smoking a spliff, and it's called I Dreamed a Dream When I Was High. And it's as hilarious as the sound you just made.
It's more hilarious, even. And there's the gym one's a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. The gym.
And then there's an X Factory one called Amazing.
Yeah. Amazing is a song that I've done probably most often for like 5 or 6 years, so long. People won't let me stop doing it. And I wrote it for one of those quite obscure little alternative comedy gigs where they give you a theme.
Oh, yes.
Like, I think it was with, I can't remember what group, but like people like, anyway, Stu Goldsmith was there that night, and we got given a character. It's not often. I really enjoy these gigs. Maybe as an improviser, I quite enjoy the chance to do something different. And you have to write material for it, this theme. And it was in Shoreditch, I remember. And they gave me this character who was basically me as a sort of wizened Helen Mirren, but of songwriting at the age of 75, winning a Grammy for songwriting. So I wrote I'm Amazing for that gig. And Stu Goldsmith was the one. I was like, well, that's done. I'll just ditch it. It was just for that gig. And Stu Goldsmith was there, and he was like, no, you should do that again. I think it will translate. And it does, and it does. And I've been doing it every fucking gig.
But that's the weird thing about it, because music, people want to hear again.
Yeah, they
and
really
jokes,
do.
Jokes, people don't really want to hear again. So what I find, if you leave it long enough, many of your audience have dead, and new ones have been born. That's the beauty of birth. And the beauty of death, which is usually a bad thing. But it means you can reel out the same thing 10 years on.
Yeah.
But like with music, it is odd that people, you just want to see, like Tim Minchin's thing, that song for Phil Doust. I can listen to that a million times and
I love
that
Tim Minchin. Yeah, all of his I remember seeing Ready to Go. It's like the first show that I saw of his, and all of the songs from that I can just listen to again and again. Yeah,
but it's interesting with music. I mean, you're obviously, with all that experience in the Christian rock band, playing the organ. You're a very impressive singer, so you can do that X Factor parody, and it sounds as good as
which is fun. It's interesting because then it's like you get to a point where it's not just about the songwriting; it's about what you are doing on stage, and that's the way that it's less depressing to do it again and again and again. Yeah. You can do it. You can really can do it.
The music has to be good. And I think there's musical comedians who the words is funny, but the music isn't as good. And Tim's a great example of someone who's an amazing composer and amazing musician. Yeah. And I think you are as well. So you want to hear those things again. But it's fun with the X Factor one, the way you're doing all the, what they do of that. You're not really even parodying it that far.
No.
I mean, that is actually
what they do. Yeah, I know.
So it's fun to see. Do look those up on YouTube. I'll put links in the in the what's it called?
Hey, thanks, great.
Yeah, definitely will. And you're also Murder in Successville, which is one of my favourite shows as well.
Yeah, that was really fun. It was one of the I remember auditioning for it years ago because it took a long time. Murder in Successville to sort of quite a long time to go through the procedure of people saying yes to it and it being made, because obviously it's quite a confusing concept.
Yes. It's absolutely insane.
So you've got a real celebrity who is sort of playing themselves, but also a character as a rookie policeman with Tom Davis, and then a cast of actor improvisers playing fake celebrities, and there's a murder mystery to solve, but it's really about the improv. It's a very confusing concept, but people seem to have really enjoyed
it. And they're sort of not quite impressions, but they're sort of impressions.
Another confusing thing is like, for some of them, they're like, we want you to actually do an impression of this. And for some, they're just like, we want you to do your own take on it. So I did Lady Gaga and Sarah Millican and Tess Daly. And for Lady Gaga, they were like, they said to me about Lady Gaga, they were like, I don't think anyone really knows what she sounds like. So do what you want. But for Sarah Millican, they were like, Sarah Millican is all about the voice, so try and learn how to do a Geordie accent, which I attempted.
Good. I'm going to ask you an emergency question from the Emergency Question app, which you can download. Have you done that in the interval? Yeah, well done.
What have you got in your wallet there? Is that a Network Rail card?
It is. That's my net. That gives you 30% off-peak travel.
I can never get over people who don't have a Network Rail card. Like, unless you're a young person, then you've got a young person's rail card.
Well, I didn't know about it, and I tweeted about the fact that I was coming in, how nice it was coming in the train, and someone, thank you, Matthew, whatever it was, tweeted me and told me, and, you know, it's already paid for itself. It's 30% off. You've got to spend over £13 for it to work.
Yeah.
So usually you do get the travel card as well on the shorter journeys. If you're coming from well in north, you need to get the travel card.
I mean, I could talk to you about this.
But then it's only 50p more for no one commuting in from Hertfordshire.
Since I stopped being in a Christian rock band, I evangelise about Network Rail cards. Praise the Lord.
I'm on Twitter. Let's go. I'm so old. I'm surprised that I'm so... I thought this second one, I was... So, boxer shorts or serendipity? That is a question.
I feel like they're the same thing.
Are they? In a way.
Just leaving things to chance, if anything, is what they're both about.
Here's a question. I'll ask another one. That was silly, that one. What is the... I don't know what's wrong with me. I seem to be obsessed with the same things for some reason. What is the strangest thing you've found in your cleavage, belly button or anal cleft? Doesn't have to be in all three.
Great question.
But it'd be great if it was in all three. And it was strange.
Cleavage,
belly button or anal cleft?
I don't think I found that much interesting in my belly button.
Really? That's the prime one for me. My cleavage isn't...
Exactly.
It isn't all there.
You haven't got the opportunity. I've found a paperclip and a great deal of food. The worst thing is when... A great deal of food down there. The worst thing is obviously when when you're eating a chocolate bar and chocolate flakes fall down there and obviously they melt and then you've got melted chocolate and you don't mind it being on your skin. That's great. But it's melted into your bra and then you're like, oh no, that's terrible. I haven't yet got chocolate down my butt crack, but...
Well, I've got another question about that.
The night is young.
I think the good thing about being a 50-year-old dad is that I spill a lot of food on myself because I'm 50, but I can blame it on my children. And I've generally gone out with stuff all down me and then realise it's there and then gone, it's okay, people assume it was my children. And it is, and it's always me spilling
food. That's
what
Carrie-Anne Lloyd you had on your show. Obviously, we spend a lot of time together and I remember saying to her, because I think she's really cool, the way she dresses and everything. She's got a real style. And she's got this really nice leather jacket with badges on it and stuff. And I remember saying to her a few months ago, and she's got a baby now, and I remember saying, I just thought she'd spilt it 5 minutes ago. And I was like, oh, mate, you've got a thing there. And she was like, mate, it's been there for 5 weeks. This is what motherhood is. Don't give a shit.
It is. Often you just don't get time to clean yourself in the day.
That's what she said. She said, I clocked that 5 weeks ago.
But I just go, I haven't had a shower for 2 days. Yeah. Probably should. It's difficult, man. It's difficult. I don't know how hard my life is. My little countryside house.
Oxbridge education.
Okay, hold on. Oh, that's quite good. The problem with this is you press it again and then it's gone past.
Oh, no.
Do you think there are any conspiracy theories that are actually true? It's basically the gist of that question, is the ones that you believe. Because they've increasingly, I think, the conspiracy theories are now... They've sort of entered... They've gone... 20 years ago, conspiracy theories, everyone thought they were nuts. And now, pretty much people can say anything and they can go, fake news at the end. If people say it's not true and it's believable. So awful ones in America, obviously, where people are claiming awful atrocities haven't
actually
happened.
About 9/11.
Yeah.
I don't think I believe them, but I have always wondered about... Oh, no, I can't.
Go on. We'll cut it out.
About Princess Diana.
Yeah. We've all wondered.
I don't think the Queen was involved.
No. I think she was in the white Fiat.
But, there's a lot of stuff that doesn't add up.
There is.
There is. And I don't think they would have gone to the Queen with it. I've never said this out loud before. But, she was causing a lot of, inconvenience to the royal family. They've got a lot of power, haven't they?
They do have quite a lot of power.
And there's a lot of... I don't know if I do believe that, but it's crossed my mind.
Well, some of them have to be true. You know, some things have to be true. Yes. Right? And you do, you know, that's the thing you realise about the world is increasingly that if you have power, you get away with a lot of stuff until maybe finally you don't. But a lot of them would take a lot of... See, 9/11 would take a lot of covering up.
Yeah.
It would be really... I mean, I think someone did it... And the number of people who'd have to be involved in 9/11 for 9/11 to be a...
too big.
To be a complete cover-up.
I've watched a lot of programmes like Spooks.
Yes.
Which I think hasn't helped my conspiracy theory scepticism.
Spooks isn't real.
Well, you say that. But it's very convincing, isn't it?
It is.
And it had a lot of series. So it's very persuasive indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think there's certainly stuff. You know, I mean, the thing with the Princess Diana.
I feel like you've got one then.
I think Paul McCartney isn't the real Paul McCartney.
Oh my God! Can I just tell you? So, an ex-boyfriend of mine when I was 21, as a sort of joke Valentine's present, which was hilarious. FYI, what all women want on Valentine's Day is a joke gift. No, it was hilarious, actually. It was a second-hand book called The Walrus Was Paul, which was a substantial book about Paul McCartney being dead.
Yeah.
And it was so funny. So funny. But there's a lot of evidence, isn't there?
There was a hell of a lot of evidence, if you look at the internet.
There's also Paul McCartney.
Yeah, he's still there.
Still, I mean, the still chances, living, looking quite a lot like Paul McCartney.
The chances of them, and increasing like a middle-aged lady, but it's the chances of him dying in a car crash and then finding someone else
who looked exactly like him,
who they could have met already, who also was able to write good. So, I mean, maybe the second one's the good one. Because it was quite early on he died.
If anything, the fake Paul McCartney is the national treasure.
Very exciting, Paul McCartney could be. I used to watch Thronecast all the time.
Did you?
Yeah.
When
you were on it, yeah. Before they decided to throw loads of money at it, I think. Because we love Game of Thrones, and then Thronecast came on, and you got this job.
I love Game of Thrones. So, yeah, I loved Game of Thrones, and then I got the chance to audition for, they've done several... like making it more expensive bits through the series, and I was the first time they did a reboot, that's the word, they did a sort of reboot of it, I sent for series 4, and they got me and Jamie East to present it. So we very much had to do several screen tests, and the main thing was like, do you really know about, have you read all the books, do you watch it avidly, do you know the history, the folklore, like sort of Tolkien-esque knowledge of it.
Yeah, because I can never remember... I watch it. I don't know who any of the characters are or what any of their names are, apart from Tyrion.
And that's good.
And you know, they come back on again, and I don't know why what the significance of it is. That's why I watch Thronecast.
I mean,
because you explain it, or whoever explains
it. There's so many characters, there's so many families, and there's also all the alluded history that you get in the program and in the book. So. I knew a bit of it, and then for the auditions I had to learn more.
Yeah.
And I definitely had to know a hell of a lot more than the people with more presenting experience. Like, they were like, well, I've presented Big Brother's Little Brother. So, but I was like, well, I'm very green, so I have to know more about Game of Thrones. So I loved doing it. It was such a weird experience.
Yeah.
It was just after my first Edinburgh show, my first solo show, and I was... very new, and they gave me a stylist who chose what I would wear, which included 4-inch heels, which I cannot walk in, and dresses which were very short, and it was odd, and I was taught how to sort of stand in front of a camera, and I didn't really get to do as much comedy as I wanted to do about it. So anyway, I did one series, and then they kind of upgraded to Sue Perkins. Fair enough.
No,
she's great.
Like, Jamie East, who was the co-presenter with you, stayed in the series, but has become this kind of lesser role of, like, a sort of Wikipedia of... I think it's more humiliating to still be in it than to... Don't you?
I know.
It's like, I used to be that. I used to be there. But now I'm going to be the bloke who has to just...
Well, you can
tell
say
you
that,
about this
but
stuff.
I would gladly have his job. Yeah, so I love doing that. And so when I wasn't doing that, I started doing my own podcast about it, and I did my own blog about it, and I still am a total geek about it. So yeah, I was like, take me on as a writer. I'll be an anonymous writer. I have so much to say about Game of Thrones.
It's very exciting. I still love it. What do you think is going to happen? Who do you think is going to be on the Iron Throne at the end of it all?
I think that...
I won't know who it is.
Who watches it? Give me a cheer.
Oh, everyone.
Yeah. Lots of people. So
the only boobs some of these guys have ever seen in their life.
Like...
They've got them on the internet now. You can just see them on the internet.
I feel like it's got to be Daenerys or Jon Snow. Obviously, the big reveal was that he's kind of the legitimate heir, yeah, essentially, like more legitimate than she is.
Yeah.
But I think from a feminist point of view, I'd be pretty pissed off if she's not on the throne at the end of it. I think she's gone a bit cray.
Yeah, she
has. She's killing everyone in bad ways.
What about...
Not in good ways.
What about the blacksmith guy? I reckon it could be him.
Gendry?
Yeah, I don't know what his name is. Gendry?
Yeah, hashtag where's Gendry. I think they brought Gendry back. I don't think that... I think he's a great character and a great actor, but I really think, like, I was one of the people going, hashtag where's Gendry, and I don't know if they've actually got a role for him or not, because he's just the son of the old king who no one's even arguing that... about that dynasty anymore, so I don't know.
What about the what's his face, who's Jon Snow's mate and is the maester? I know I've met that bloke in real life and I can't remember this character's name. You know, the maester.
Sam Tarly. Well, he's going to obviously like be a huge help because he's got all the knowledge from Old Town.
I reckon he could be the king.
He can't be the king.
I reckon
you are off your
face. Ice dragon.
Yeah, that was pretty exciting, wasn't it?
Yeah, but like, if they hadn't, spoiler alert for people, why haven't you watched it?
Should have said spoiler alert 10 minutes ago. Yeah,
if they hadn't gone up to rescue those guys, then they would. I think that evil guy with the pointy head.
Yeah.
he knew, didn't he? He wanted him to come up.
Yeah, he did.
He did. He didn't want to kill because he wanted
a
dragon.
He's a smart guy.
The dragon blew down the wall, so they fucked that up, didn't they?
I can't believe the wall's gone now. Yeah, you just forgot that.
Had to really, didn't
it? What a series. Action packed. Stupid. I could talk about this in a very uninteresting way for up to 25 hours.
Let's do it. Let's do it for 25 hours.
Why did they sack me from Thronecast?
Cool. I'm going to, while I look at my thing. Oh, yeah, well, I think these are things that are coming up. Death Ship 666, is that something that's happened or is that something?
No, that's something I did a few years ago.
Oh, is it? Because on your website, it looks like that's upcoming. Update your website. What was Death Ship 666? Or maybe I misread it.
That was a really fun comedy show, a parody of Titanic. And I played essentially Kate Winslet, but in that she was called Grandma. She just played the old woman all the way through.
Maybe is it the Christmas thing that's coming up?
Yes, that's coming up. Yeah, I'm doing a show called 30 Christmases that I did last year for the whole Christmas period in Oxford, and this year I'm doing it in London at the New Diorama for all of December. It's with Johnny and the Baptist, do you know that?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's the three of us, me, Johnny and Paddy, and it's really... It is very much a comedy. It's really funny. It's like musical Christmas show, but it is a beautiful story as well. It's about like what do you do if you haven't got home at Christmas, essentially. Right. But it's really fun.
Good. We'll watch that.
Tickets are available now.
Are you touring? You've done quite a few stand-up-y shows in Edinburgh. They're all quite different. Some musical and some character. Always a bit of a mixture.
They're always everything.
Yeah.
As with this, as you say, you continue to try and shove everything in, but some more than others. So yeah, I think when I first started, I had like 11 songs in the show, which was a lot. So it was mostly musical comedy with a little bit of stand-up in between. And then I did a sort of character and musical show, and then last year I did Best Laid Plans, which is a very personal kind of musical comedy and stand-up show, and this last one, Keynote, which is character bits, but it's always got music in it, because I can't stop doing songs.
Yes, well, that's fair enough. And you're going to be touring that as
I
well?
I am, in spring, yeah.
So you're doing Ostentatious at the moment?
Yeah, Ostentatious at the moment, 30 Christmases, and then Keynote.
Blimey, I thought I did a lot, but that's... but do you find touring difficult? I mean, I'm sort of thinking maybe I'll knock it on the head.
I think I don't do tour. Ostentatious is fairly full on. That's about 3 or 4 nights a week for a couple of months. But I've never done touring, I think, to the way you and a lot of comedians do, which is like week after week after week for like months and months.
Yeah.
A lot of nights on the road. I've never done it to that extent. And I think I would hate that. I hate it. And I haven't even got a family like to come back to. I think I wouldn't like that at all.
Yeah, it's not weird. It's more difficult when you haven't got other people to come back to in a way. It's sort of just so...
It's
lonely
just like,
and tragic.
What is my life? The Ibis is my life now. At least, thank you for the chocolate chip biscuits.
When you have a family, you go, at least I'll be going home, to that, something after this.
Whereas I take the chocolate chip biscuits in my handbag. Genuinely did that this week, and I had them today as a treat 5 days later.
That's very impressive. Mine, I always eat the biscuit. If there are biscuits, which there aren't in many hotels.
No.
They're straight in my mouth the minute. And whatever I've eaten, whatever time I get there, however many packets are in there, if the trolley's left outside, then I'll have some more. I had to get to the point where I would flush the biscuits down the toilet when I was on a diet.
I do.
To stop, because I thought, I'll get back and I'll be hungry and I'll eat the biscuit.
I do that.
Yeah.
It's really bad, isn't it? It's not good psychologically. I put things in the bin.
It's a waste of water and food.
Yeah, it's you really, can't really bad, because I'm like, I will eat... All of, like a packet of biscuits. Yeah. It was like 20 biscuits. And I'm like, I'm going to have to, I've eaten 5 or 10. I'm going to have to put the rest. Oh, dear. Edit this bit out.
And what were you going to do? You promised me you had some revelation about my...
Oh, it's not a revelation.
You're going to talk about my
it's
wife.
It's not a revelation, really.
My wife remembered to gigging with you a lot.
Yeah,
or, back in the day.
Me and Katie gigged a lot together a few years. So around 2011, and she was she'd moved in with you.
Yeah.
And so the context
got
of the story
got a foot in the door.
So the context of the story is like, so me and my brother Preston grew up like watching Lee and Herring on TV and everything, Fist of Fun and Rich and Judy, all of that. And so, and my brother is like a bigger comedy fan than I ever was. So I think he was a bit annoyed when I went into comedy. So he loves you and everything. And when I started doing comedy around 2010 and... I did a gig a year later with Katie, and she was very kindly going to drive us to Norwich, and she said, why don't you come to my house, your house. And so I was like, yeah, of course. And it was only when I got there and like halfway through she was like, oh yes, you know, going out with in a relationship with Richard Herring. And and I was like, Richard Herring? Do you Richard Herring? She was like, yeah. And
she
so
was probably, yeah, what?
Yeah. She was very nonchalant. Yeah. And so, I went and used the bathroom. Not deliberately, I really needed a wee. And I just texted my brother. Because I knew he was the only person who would be so excited. I was like, I am sitting on Richard Herring's toilet right now. And I'm so pleased he has his phone on. He texted back right away going, holy fuck. And I was like, I know. I was like, he's not here. And he's like, oh, shit. But it was a real exciting moment. That was certainly the moment, I think, when my brother was like, my sister has made it. Sitting on Richard Herring's toilet.
Yeah, well, if that's making it, then...
And it's never happened since. A short 7 years later, and here I am.
If you want to come and sit on my toilet, you can come back. You can use my NetWet rail card. Though if they catch us doing that, we'll be in a lot of trouble.
Mate, I've obviously got my own.
Okay. And we should talk about the MASH report again.
Yes.
MASH, we had Ellie on 2 weeks ago. Now you're
fucked. The listeners will be like, why are they laughing?
So that's very exciting.
Yeah.
So you're on the kind of email, Twitter wall kind of thing.
I am, I get, it's really fun because I get to do the two roles. I get to do the sort of like social media person, and then I get to be Emma Bradford, who's doing the news reports as well.
Yes,
in a ginger wig. I love doing it. It's really nice because me and Ellie made a sort of trailer for that, like about 3 years ago. It takes so long to get things made.
Yeah.
And we never thought anything. We never thought anything would come of it, and then the BBC picked it up.
Yeah, it's good. There's a whole everyone in it's sort of new-ish, really, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it's a good team of people there.
It's really lovely.
So there's more of those coming up in the next year.
Absolutely, yeah. So yeah,
have you been replaced by Sue Perkins in that?
No doubt.
No
doubt. I'm waiting for the call. Maybe I'll get to keep one of the jobs. No. Yeah, it's really lovely to do because we've all kind of me and Nish and Ellie, and then you've got like. Andy Murray and Pianovelli and Jeff Nork, and we've all kind of gigged, and Tom Neenan writes it as well, and all these, we've all gigged together for years, really, since we started. So it's really lovely, quite satisfying that we get to make the, we've been allowed to make this show together, with people we just all assume, would be replaced by more famous people, and they didn't. So that was great.
Well, I think that's what's the, you know, but that's the strength of it, and I think that's the thing that lots of TV executives don't seem to get, is that things that are successful are generally with new people and in new ideas, and they think, oh, that person's been in something successful, so we'll put them in something else.
Yeah, totally.
As if that kind of rubs off in that way. But actually, when you bring new people to something, A, if you get the right group of people, the danger is you bring together a group of people and they don't gel, or they don't know each other, or they've been brought together because someone's gone, oh, them, and them.
Yeah.
But this, it does seem to have some kind of cohesion.
It does. We're genuinely all friends. Yeah. So, like, it really, I think it does make a difference because it's obviously recorded in front of a live audience. There's a lot going on before and after the bit that you see on TV, and that creates the vibe in the room, and that is something to do with us all genuinely being friends and getting on, and chemistry, I suppose.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see a new lot of people coming through and wondering which ones will fall by the wayside in the coming years, and which of them will be doing their own podcasts and they're 50 years old. And so, is this in this year's show or last year's show where you had the stuff about the Samaritans?
That was last year's show.
So this, you had kind of a breakup in the wrong year, because this year was the year of the breakup of relationships going to win on all the awards.
I didn't think of that.
It all goes in little cycles.
Wow, we both planned it really badly. So I had a show called Best Laid Plans that was very honest. Show about a breakup that I had, and we've all been through them, and it was in many ways very lucky, an amicable breakup, mutual breakup, apparently. And it was a show about that, and I got very sad for the first time, because I'm generally very upbeat and I've been brought up to be very stoical and get on with things and don't be self-indulgent and that kind of thing, but I got really sad. I ended up calling the Samaritans, not because I was going to kill myself, just because I felt really, really sad and I didn't know who to talk to, and I googled it. And you google the Samaritans and it says you can just email us, so I just emailed them. I just pinged them an email and they were lovely and they wrote back to you. So that's what the show was about, this exchange of emails between me and the Samaritans, and it was fun.
And did it help?
Had a happy ending.
Did it come out?
I'm still alive.
You're still here. It's good to know, and it's good to know that the Samaritans have embraced that new technology as well.
Because
I don't like ringing people. I don't like bothering people.
Yeah. That is what they said. So I had no intention of involving them in a sort of professional way, but they got in touch with me, probably being like, "What the fuck are you saying about us?" And I sort of explained what the show was about, and they were like, "Oh, that's great. That's what we want to say to people, is that we're not just the suicide charity, that we're kind of there for people at every stage, actually." So they were quite supportive, actually, of the show.
Yeah.
Because it was this other side. People are like, "Oh, yes, you called the Samaritans. You must have been standing on a bridge." And actually, they're there for every level of you feeling a bit shit.
Yeah, sure. And it's, that's interesting. You do come across as a very, positive and bubbly and friendly person.
Yeah.
And so it's kind of, and I think you're saying it's not about depression exactly, is it?
Yeah, I didn't know. I find it hard to know what words to use these days, because I think maybe even 10 years ago I would have said I was depressed. I was depressed.
Yeah.
But I think that now I wouldn't know if it wasn't bipolar, it wasn't clinical depression. I don't know if it was there's so many different labels to put on everything, and I wouldn't attempt to take that categorization from people who have much bigger problems than myself.
Yeah, but I mean, that's, it's
so it's hard to know what language
it is hard
to use.
Know, but also, if they're your problems, it doesn't, if it's the worst thing that's happened to you in your life,
it was,
that's comparatively
it's
to
the
you.
Saddest, so it's the saddest about. I've been. Yeah, yeah, it's the saddest I've been. So you never know what words to use. At the time, I really consciously veered away from using the word depression for these reasons.
Yeah.
But now, actually, I've had a few people who I'm friends with who have depression who've said, actually, say that you had depression, because there's a spectrum, and course, it's good to get the word more sort of normalised. So I don't know what the answer is. Please talk to me afterwards if you have an opinion on it. I'd love to hear from you.
But you know, I think it's interesting because like, you know, people go, there's this sort of stereotypes of comedians being sad clowns, but you know, comedians, and I think it's partly just because, I mean, there are definitely some very depressed comedians, and some of the ones who you wouldn't expect to be very depressed are in real life very depressed. But it's about, you know, all human beings go through that stuff. Maybe because someone's funny, you think, oh, they're sad now. That's weird. So that's why it sort of sticks out. But I think going, you know, I remember in my 30s, I went through so much terrible stuff. Yeah. And you are sort of struggling on your own. And you think, oh, this isn't as bad as that. But you don't know, you know, it's hard to quantify, isn't it? How do you know how bad someone else is feeling compared to you?
Exactly, so that's what it is.
You can only quantify it as yourself. And I think, you know, I was probably in a similar thing to you, I would say. I just always carried on when I was feeling bad about stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it?
So how did you make that funny, though? Did you not bother? Just go, I'm very depressed. And...
No, I did. There was one poignant song in it that was probably a bit funny, but a little bit sad as well. But by and large, I think it was funny. And it was... What was funny was what do you say in an email to the Samaritans? Like, they know what the deal is. What do you put in that subject title? Like I say in the show, like, you know, sad sack number 33. Or like, I guess that is why they call it the blues. You know, what do you say to the Samaritans? And I ended up sort of sounding far more sort of polite and trying to not make a big deal of it and being like, I'm sure you're very busy and I'm not trying to kill myself, so please don't come round. There is comedy in every, I think, in every subject. No. So I mind it, because that's what you do as a comedian.
And are you feeling happier in yourself
now? Thank you.
Is everything going okay
I am,
now?
Yeah. It's true. I think that's why I wanted to do a show about it, is because generally, that is true of me. I am generally a happy, upbeat person. So that was an event. It was an event.
Well, I've done, you know, I did a show called The 12 Tasks of Hercules Terrace, which was me working through being depressed, one of my midlife crises.
Yeah.
And even as I was writing it, I was still in the middle of it all.
Yeah,
and it was only kind of when
I
got to the end of and did it that I kind of went, oh, there's quite a lot, you know, the show showed me as well as anyone else that there was, you know, you get through the other side.
Yeah, I had exactly the same. Writing it through it and then looking back and being like, oh, great therapy. Thank you.
Good. Emergency question time. Yeah. Sorry, we're going home soon. Oh, it'll be all right. You know what this is, right? Okay. This is a good one. International Women's Day. When's International Men's Day?
14th of...
19th of November.
19th of November.
Did I die
you
for nothing?
You tell everyone, but you never tell me, because I never ask.
19th of November. Standard Issue are doing an International Men's Day gig. I think they wanted me to do it, but I'm gigging in Bristol that night. And I don't do... It's International Women's Day I like to ruin by making it all about men. What is your favourite direction on the compass?
West.
No.
No explanation.
No explanation required. That's interesting to just go for one of the main ones. I'd have gone for
south-east or something.
Yeah, I'd have done that. That would have been more interesting with your answer.
Well, maybe if you give me the questions to prep.
Well, I can't, because it comes up randomly. This is a question on the dating app.
Oh, great. Yeah.
Which has a heart... biological picture of a heart in it, which I find disgusting. What's the most unusual thing you've ever collected? Come on, there's something in Rachel Paris.
What did I used to collect?
You must have collected.
I did. I'm trying to remember. Oh my God.
Let's take a long time to think about it.
But I mean, we can be here for 16 minutes. You edit this out.
No, I'm going to leave it in.
Leave.
I'm actually going to loop that silence 4 or 5 times to make it long. Just to build the tension, I might just put a very low, just a quiet but ascending scale that gets louder and louder until we hit it.
I genuinely can't remember because of the pressure. Like several things, but there's too much pressure.
Stamps is the most unusual thing I collected.
That's normal.
I know, but that's who I was. I used to collect...
Isn't that called something that sounds a bit...
Philately. Yeah. I used to collect, well, I didn't collect them, but every time there was, no, I'm old. Every time there was a 2 shilling or shilling.
I didn't mean to just nod.
Yeah. Every time there was a two shilling or a shilling in your change, which there used to be. You remember that old timer? Yeah. Yeah, you're an old timer. Look at it. Remember this? I can't be 50. Look, what's this? It's all real. I'd collect them and put them in a chess box.
You collect what? Coins?
10p's and 5p's, but there were shillings. In the old days, they had shillings.
That's just called saving.
They had shillings. They had a shilling and 2 shillings. No, but in your change, there'd be 10p's and 5p's, but the same size were the old shilling and two shillings.
That you couldn't use.
And sometimes you got one with a king's head on, didn't you? Do you remember that? Old King George the... you're not... Yeah. But do you remember getting the coins with the king's head on them still? How can I be older than that guy?
How old are you?
Sometimes you get whatever his face was. King George, was he the stuttering one?
You can't have lived through that.
No, but you'd still get them in the change in the 1970s. You'd still get...
I don't believe you.
Sometimes you'd get a set of sixpence and it'd be in the Christmas pudding, wouldn't it, David? You remember, David, don't you? You remember the king's head on the 10p's?
Oh, and I would go to the sweet shop with 6 shillings.
I collected those. And then I kept them in a chess box where the pieces would, you know, instead of with the velvet line thing. And then I spent all of them ringing up my girlfriend from a phone box, even though we had a phone.
You were just indulging in the past, weren't you? You were like, we've got a phone. No, I'll go to the phone box.
Yeah. Why do we have frozen peas?
For head injuries.
Okay. It's a good answer. This is one of the children's questions. If you could put a custard pie in the face of anyone in the world with no returns, who would you custard pie?
Noel Edmonds.
Would he?
Yeah, not because I hate him.
Yeah.
That's a byproduct. no, I don't know. I think he's quite funny, and I just think that it would be quite good and it would get caught in his beard. And also, he's very good at that kind of slapstick entertainment. So I think he'd receive the pie very well, I think.
Yeah, I wonder, did he ever get... I mean, he gunged a lot of people, but did he ever get gunged?
He must have been,
I don't know if he did. I think he's that kind of guy. He's a gunger, but he won't take the gunge back. He'll cover everyone else in gunge.
Did he used to watch the house party?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to watch it every Sunday.
Yeah.
Was it great?
It wasn't great. But Rebecca Front, who I forgot to ask about this, was one of the original Gotcha actors.
No, was she?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
She did a Gotcha on Eddie Large. And I had her here in the studio. And let's just pretend. Have you ever met Brian Blessed, the actor Brian Blessed?
I'm afraid I haven't, no.
What's wrong with the younger generation?
Sorry. I want to. I'm not rejecting his advances or anything. I'd like if I was invited to meet him, I would go and meet him, but I haven't been invited to yet.
If he comes on here, I will invite you to
meet him.
And then see if we can get a story out of it.
Yeah, great.
And then I'll invite you back on to tell the story of how you met Brian Blessed backstage. Yeah.
And you'll be like, 3 weeks ago when Brian Blessed was here.
Oh, this is a good question. Well, I'll end on this question. What do women want?
They want to live their lives in peace.
Bad luck. it hasn't worked out for you. It's been amazing to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming on. I'm a huge fan. Do go and see all of the things, Rachel, the many, too many things that Rachel Paris does. Ostentatious is amazing. Go and see you on tour. Go and see you doing Christmases.
Yes, come to 30 Christmases. Come to Keynote.
Watch you on the MASH report.
Watch me on the MASH report. And on the Plebs, which me and Ellie Taylor are going to be on.
Oh, my God. I could have talked. Let's get her back in.
Were you meant to be on that?
I was meant to be a pervy, many a delivery man. I don't... If it wasn't so tired, I'd come up with a great response to that. just imagine. Well, I'm delivering the wax tablets.
Yeah. I can see it now.
No, loads of Bamaro. Should have been good. And check out YouTube as well. So fantastic. Okay. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Rachel Paris.
Thank you
so much for coming. You have been listening to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Rachel Paris. The music that you listen to now is by Pest. Why don't you just remember that? Then I won't have to remember it every week. Just remember it, okay? I'd like to thank everyone at Leicester Square Theatre. I'd like to thank everyone at Go Fast Stripe and everyone at the British Comedy Guide. They're all lovely, especially Orange Mark. He hasn't had an orange juice for ages. My producer is Ben Walker, and it's a Fuzz GoFasterStripe.com and Sky Potato production.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.